Oh, you go.
Yeah, okay.
Which one?
This one.
Okay.
You?
I'll say that.
Oh, okay. What's your surname?
Sayed.
Oh, you're Sayed. Oh, okay. I'm actually a Sunday when I go on the train. From the Bengay, yeah, I know. Not really, but I know he is, yeah.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I am Pumelele Sibisi, the committee secretary. According to the parliamentary rules, in the absence of the chairperson, the secretary has to ensure that the acting chairperson is elected. So I now ask for nomination. Is there any? Mr. Svande.
Sawubona. I propose the name of Honorable Dow to share for us.
Is there any second that Honorable Dow's name has been nominated? Mr. Mlenzani.
As per the indication in that chair, I second.
Thank you. Are there further nominations? Prince Zulu. Thank you very much, Mr. Tao. You have been duly elected as the standing chairperson.
No, thank you very much, Committee Secretary and honorable members. on behalf of the chair of the committee, as acting chair, I would want to take the opportunity to welcome everybody present, particularly the department. We would note that in terms of our agenda item, we've got only one item on the agenda, which is a briefing on the Employment Equity Amendment Act. Honorable members, on those grounds, the second item, we only had one item because we still have to, deal with apologies, my apology. We have a formal apology, of course, by the for the chair. Honorable Mapija, the delegate from Limpopo, is struggling with flights to get through to Cape Town. But hopefully she would. Is she around now? Yes, yes. So as soon as she is able to land in Joburg, in Cape Town, she'll be able to join. Of course, we had expected to be joined by the minister, but because of prior commitments, she's unable to be with us today. We also have an apology from Mr. Feldman, Jacobs, and De Beer. Who are unable to be with us. Now, without wasting any time, then I would open or declare the meeting open officially. And then, looking at the agenda item, I think it is important that we need to lay the basis for all of us to understand. In that one, we are dealing with a subject matter that is still at an embryonic stage in terms of processing, because the briefing that we are going to get on this piece of legislation, there are processes that has been put in place and that it has to go through. One such is the process of NATLEG. And we would understand better that because of this, the strategic nature of the piece of legislation and its location within society and the economy as a whole, we need to take into account what all stakeholders have to say before even Parliament can deal with the details of the piece of legislation and adopt it. So the key stakeholders, obviously, in terms of the structures as established in our democratic system, is NATLEG, where you have your broad constituencies, labor, business, and what is it called? Civic. The civic organization, yes. They are now in the process of laying the ground rules on how to approach the piece of legislation, meaning, therefore, that NATLEG has not even started to engage with the details of the piece of legislation. Now, what the chair thought is that we shouldn't be left too far behind the processes as members of Parliament, because the issues are there in the public domain. We are being asked questions in our constituencies and so forth on what is happening, how to respond to some of the things and so on. So we then thought that it is necessary for this committee to be then brought on board on those broad principle areas that the piece of legislation seeks to address. Therefore, meaning this meeting is not going to conclude on any matter except for us receiving information and be better positioned to engage with the kind of questions that will be coming through in our constituencies and so forth. So by the time the piece of legislation has gone through the NATLEG process, and if there are major amendments to it, for obvious reasons, it will go back to cabinet. And once it has been processed now at the level of cabinet, then it will be officially introduced now in parliament, and then committees of parliament will then kickstart the necessary processes in terms of the legislative process of parliament. Now, so I just thought that I must explain that process so that all of us must understand why we are dealing with the subject matter before us. And I hope I'm at the same footing with the department, so that we don't end up getting something that we had not expected as a committee. Give us the broad areas in terms of what the piece of legislation seeks to address. We are not going to conclude anything today except to receive the information and be better empowered and better positioned to be able to deal with the kind of questions that we're confronted with. With me, my name, as already mentioned, Dao Papi, as they normally call me. We've got, I'm trying to, oh, no, let me not do that. I'm representing the Northern Cape in the National Council of Provinces and in this select committee on our own.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning. I am Zola Mlenzana, representing the province of the Eastern Cape in the NCOP and in this committee.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, a member of this committee and representing the Northwest Province.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mdwapuana Mbongsenzulu. I'm representing KwaZulu Natal as a province.
More for Setzer. For Setzer, that's what I'm saying. Yes. My name is Mtikeni Patrick Sibande. I'm a member of this committee. I'm representing Mpumalanga province.
And other members who have
the apologies and so forth. Can we go to the department? Can the leader of the delegation introduce his delegation?
First, we need to apologize for the director, acting director general, who was not able to make it to this meeting. He's been called in an urgent meeting with the Auditor General in Pretoria. He was here in Cape Town this morning. My name is Temingo Simkalipi, Chief Director, Labor Relations, Department of Labor.
Morning, my name is Nsoki Mamashela, the Director, Employment Equity in the Department of Labor.
Morning, everyone. My name is Dixon Mukono, Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Ministry.
Are you with us? Everybody there
knows us. All right. Are you leading the delegation? All right. Can you lead then the presentation? Yes, sir.
Chair, in the light of your introductory remarks, and also in welcoming the apology, Katatum Kalipi, with understanding that with him, the department is well represented. I am not sure, because we have been dealing with the department. This is some kind of a continuous engagement. If you are ready, but if you are not, you don't have to. We have been raising issues on the act, which we saw as loophole. I'm not sure if you will be able to reflect so that members could see that their inputs have been taken care of in this piece of document. I, for one, I find time to go through it yesterday. I would comment when time comes. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Let's allow Mr. Mkalipi to lead the process. But we shouldn't lose sight of the earlier remarks I made to say the issue is not official in our parliament where we can engage to a point where we want to amend. You see, it's only once it has passed the stage of cabinet, once it is officially introduced now in parliament, as members now will be able to say, we don't agree with us what it must change, it must read like this, this must read like this, and all the sorts of things. Whether if we go to public hearing for public hearings and all that, so that by the time we adopt it, it's then I think we will then be asking the question, is it reflecting the issues that we had raised or the public had raised that we stand here to represent? I think at that stage we'll then be able to deal with it. But for now, it's just to bring us on board in relation to the overall thrust of the bill itself. Okay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you to the members. We really appreciate this opportunity to come and talk about and explain the changes that we're proposing on this bill. We hope that this explanation will resolve some of the issues that are being asked in the public about the intention and the amendments that we need here. I think it's important that we indicate what are the objectives and what is the contents of the proposal on these amendments. And I think the first one is we, as a country, have ratified a number of International Labour Organization conventions. And when a country ratifies conventions of the International Labour Organization, those conventions should be reflected in the legislation of that country. Now, the intention of this amendment is then to meet our obligation in terms of those conventions, especially Convention 100 and Convention 111. That's what we intend to do. We intend to give effect to the fundamental constitutional rights that are enshrined in the Constitution, around the issue of right to equality, fair labor practice, and protection against unfair discrimination. Those are the kind of proposals that we are making. The third element is to strengthen the implementation and enforcement mechanism of the Act. For example, we're dealing with around areas of increasing the fines and for non-compliance. Now, in order to meet our obligation in terms of the International Labour Organization, we're making a proposal because we've ratified Convention 100, which deals with equal pay for work of equal value. We've ratified as a country, Parliament passed that ratification, because before you ratify a convention, it must be approved by Parliament. It was approved by Parliament. Now, the ILO has been asking the country in our reports, how does the principle of equal pay for work of equal value reflect in your legislation? And we could not answer that because presently our legislation do not reflect that principle. Although we're talking about unfair discrimination and prohibit discrimination, it does not specifically talk to this principle of equal pay for work of equal value. And that's the amendment that we're making. We're making the employment, we're making a clause there that proposes to deal with unfair discrimination by employer in respect of conditions of employment. If you're doing the same job, everything being equal, doing the same job, you've got the same service, your productivity is the same, there should be no reason that you'd be paid differently. I think the most important thing is everything being equal. We don't foresee a situation that all of a sudden everybody will be paid equal, irrespective of their productivity. That's not the intention of the convention. That's also not intention of the law. The law and the convention says everything being equal in terms of the operation, in terms of how the people do their job, then they should get equal pay for equal work. If, as I said, if we got both of us caught 14 driver's license, both of us have got 15 years working for this company, both of us travel a week 30,000 kilometers doing our delivery, what's the reason that the other one will pay less and the other one pay more? And we say because they are putting equal work, work of the equal value into the organization, they should be paid equally. That's what this proposal is trying to do, the one on equal pay for work of equal value. And the next one that we're dealing with is the issue of dealing with disputes concerning discrimination. The law as it stands now says, if there's a dispute around discrimination, there are two things that we want to deal with it here. The first one is, how do you deal with that dispute? The law says the CCMA can only conciliate. You can only go to the CCMA and the CCMA will try to conciliate the dispute. And then you go to the labor court for arbitration. Now, from where we're coming from as a country with apartheid for hundreds of years, we thought in 1995 when the law came in, 1985, when the law came in, that there will be a number of cases that are coming through the system challenging the issues of discrimination. But the cases that we've seen is organizations that are challenging the implementation of employment equity. It's not the people that are disadvantaged that are taking cases through the system to challenge the fact that they are discriminated. It's the other way around. And we believe that the reason this is happening is because many people who got cases to take, they do not have the money, they do not have the skills and the capacity to go to court, especially the labor court. And as a result of that, then we're making a proposal that says that the CCMA should be able to arbitrate cases of unfair discrimination, especially for small business. They should be able to, instead of asking a farm worker who's been discriminated to go to the labor court, it's easy for the CCMA to deal that case, then go to the labor court. And that's the amendment that we're making around the issue of discrimination, trying to make it easy for people who are aggrieved around discrimination to resolve their cases through the CCMA, by conciliation and arbitration, instead of saying the CCMA can only conciliate. That's the first amendment that we're making around there. The other amendment that we're making around the issue of discrimination is the issue that we're raising, that the law as it stands now, if we are two African males or two colored males, and where you feel you are being discriminated against me, in terms of the law, you can only take up a case of discrimination if there's gender involved. Therefore, it's a male and a female. She can take a case and say she's been discriminated because she's a female against males in terms of what she's earning, in terms of the way she's treated. But I cannot take a case against discrimination against other males. If I'm being discriminated against other African males, the law doesn't allow me to take, because there's no gender and there's no race. There's got to be gender, there's got to be race in order to take a case of discrimination. If there's no gender, there's no race, you are not able to take a case against discrimination. And we believe that's unfair. There are people who are being discriminated against their same kind. I mean, it could be a white male against other white males being discriminated. It could be an African male against other African males. Why should the law say, if there's no gender and there's no race, there's no discrimination? We do not believe that's fair. We do not believe that's correct. And that's a change also that we're making around this area. We also making a change on the issue of reporting. The present law says that there should be, it says two things. There should be different forms for small employers to report. The law says that when you do a report forms, you must design different forms for small employers. And the law has got two dates for reporting for small employers and big employers. We've changed the forms, we've simplified the forms, we've cut many of the unnecessary information that has been asked from the forms. As a result, the forms for small business and other business is the same. But because the law says you must have different forms, the other one is just written small business, the other one is written for the other business, just to meet the requirement of the law, because the law says you have not different forms. And we believe that this should go. As long as the forms are conducive, are not complicated, small business should be able to fill those forms. Just like SARS. SARS does not have a different form for this business and that business when you report for tax. It's got one form, and that form must be simple, must not be complicated, must meet the requirement of all business. And that's what we're doing with the form, and that's a proposal that we're putting. And also the reporting date, that the reporting date should be the same. On the issue around the enforcement of the law and the fines, we making a change on the area around compliance orders that must be done by inspectors. The law presently, if an employer has not met the requirement of the law, for example, the employer does not report, the inspector can't take that company to court. The inspector must give that company a compliance order that says, please comply with the law. Now, that report, remember the law says that the report must be in by the 1st of October of each year. When that employer complies with the law in January the following year, that report cannot be factored into the report that the Employment Equity Commission issues. When they give that report is too late. And we're asking, why should then the inspector have to give? The employer knows that they must comply with the law. The law is public, is there, and if they do not comply with it, inspectors should give them a compliance aid and say, please comply with the law. And then they've got 6 months to decide whether they were going to appeal on the compliance order. We say that's not necessary. If an employer has not complied with the law, the inspector must enforce the compliance. But the next area that we're dealing with on the issue of assessment, we're taking away categories. The law presently says that when employers report, they must report on the levels and categories. We're saying levels are good enough to assess whether a company has complied. They don't have to have a complicated form that asks them for levels and categories for report in order to assess employment. We're making the form simpler and taking that away. Now, in terms of the law, in section 42 of the law, I mean, this is very important. This is an area that has created a lot of discussion in the labor market. And I need to explain this area clearly so that we close this debate here once and for all. Now, this is the first problem. If you look, you've got the copy of the of the bill. If you look at at section 42 on page 11 of the bill that was given, the law says that when the Director General or inspector want to determine whether a company has complied with a law, the Director General, in addition to the factors, other factors that are in section 15, must take into account all of the following. This is very important. That's what the law says. Now, the law says they must take into account the demographic profile of the national and regional economic active population. That's what the law says as we speak now. Now, employers have been asking the department and saying, if the law says when the department judges whether I comply with the law, the department must look at both the regional and the and the national economic active population. What does that mean? The economically active population is those people that are between 18 and 64. Those people who are available to work. State South Africa goes out and do research to find out how many of those people exist in the economy. Now, let us use an example here in the Western Cape. In the Western Cape, the colored population in the national economic statistics make out 8.6%. That's their demographics. You've got... Sorry, it's 11. This is correcting me. 11.3% nationally. In the province, if we take now the demographic in the province, in Western Cape, they make up around about 51.8%. Now, if the law says, when implementing, when the Director General want to judge whether you've implemented the law or not, when the law says the Director General must take both the 11.3% and the 51%, which one is which? How can you take both? Which one is it? Must you follow the 11.1 and say, well, you've met the 11.1, therefore you comply with the law? Because remember, the law says you must take the regional and the national. That's what the law says. Now, which one does it take? In the national, the color population represent 11.3%. In the province, they represent 51.8%. Now, the law says take the national and the provincial. It means to take them both. Now, the employers are asking us, when the law says that, what do we do? How do we judge that we'll comply or not comply? Do we use the national? Because the law says use the national. If the employer now all of a sudden has got 9% representativity of colored population in the organization, has the employer met the requirement of the law? Because remember, the regional one says 52%. And the employer says, well, the law says I must use national and regional. What does it mean? And that's the confusion that is there present in the labor market. And that's the question that the employers are asking us all of these years. I say, can you explain? We can't explain it. Now, in our wisdom, we put a bill and say, well, if this is a problem in the labor market, this is what we're proposing. We propose to remove both national and regional. I repeat this. We propose to remove both national and regional. Now, in our proposal, that sentence will read there in the board. It will read, when the Director General is applying this act to check whether an employer has met the requirement of the act or not, the Director General will use the demographic profile of the economically active population. That's what the new proposal says. There's no way in that proposal that says leave regional. Remember the debate in the labor market is that we're removing regional and leaving national. Therefore, 1.3 million workers in the Western Cape are going to lose their jobs because now all of a sudden employers will have to use only the 11.1%. They don't have to use the 51%, which is in the Western Cape. That's the accusation that is put against us. But that's the proposal that we're making. Nowhere in that proposal there is, I repeat, a removal of national, of regional, and leaving national behind. The statement made by Solidarity is a lie. It's not true. Yeah, there's a proposal, you've got copies of the bill in front of you. And the bill says in the beginning that everything that is in square bracket and bolded is being removed from the act. Now, we square bracket both regional and national to remove them from the act, and that's how it will read. There's nothing unconstitutional with the way it's written. There's nothing that creates unemployment. There's nothing that says that colored people in the Western Cape or Indian people in the West Cape will lose their jobs. In fact, the way we've written it, it gives flexibility to employers. It's their call. They'll have to decide what demographic do they use. If they're able to justify the fairness of that, they might be able to say, look, we are a company that is based only in the Western Cape. We believe to look at 52% is fair for what we're doing. If they can justify the fairness of what they are doing in terms of their proposal, it's good enough. We're giving the labor market the flexibility. And same in KZN, same in the Eastern Cape, same in every area. But we're introducing flexibility and we're under attack for introducing flexibility. We've tried to explain this in the newspapers, in the TVs, in the radios, but unfortunately, guys, members, the truth sometimes does not sell newspapers. The truth does not sell newspapers. And I'm hoping that the TVs here, newspapers here, they will publish the explanation that we're making as it is to kill this discussion once and for all. If parties would vote, they can use other issues, not this issue. This is not a non-issue for us because there it is. All the reporters that have written on this issue, they have not looked at the law. All of them. They wrote because Solidarity said so. The only newspaper that corrected their mistake on this issue is the Cape Times. The Cape Times did publish a correction on the issue the following day that exactly covers the issue that is in the law, exactly as it is. Now, we've tried to make this explanation. We're making it again, this explanation. There's nowhere in the amendment, we repeat, nowhere where we're taking away regional and leaving national. Nowhere. There's nowhere in this bill where it will cause unemployment of 1.3 million of people in the West Cape anywhere. In fact, we're making it easy for employers to comply with the law, because employers have been asking us a question that we cannot answer. The next area that we're dealing with is about enforcement of the law. Presently, if the company does not comply with the law, you can only charge that company, fine that company up to 900,000. Doesn't matter how many times it doesn't comply with the law, the best that any court can find them is 900,000. Now, what we're saying is, let's look at the farmer. You've got a farmer. You're running a farmer, your turnover in this farmer is 2 million. You employ more than 50 employees. The act applies to you. You do not meet the requirement of the law. you can be charged up to 950, which is about 100% of your turnover. Which is not that 50%, sorry, my math. Which is about 50% of your turnover. We say that's unfair for small business. 900,000 can be a big amount for a small business. But 900,000 for a company like Billiton, Anglo American, for Vodacom, 900,000, it's nothing. It's not even 30 cash. It's money that they use when they go out to play golf and take out their friends for dinner and lunch. And we say, for us to be fair to small business and also have fines that are meaningless, are meaningful, we've got to peg the fines on the turnover. If your first offense, we say 2% of your turnover. Let's look at this farm now. This farm, 2 million turnover, contravene the law, what's 2% of 2 million? Talking what? 200? I'm not sure my maths, I've never got in maths. But it's far lesser than 900,000. The 2% of turnover for Billiton, who makes billions, it's bigger than 900,000, it's a big amount that we're talking about. And then that's what we're saying. And then we're following in the footsteps of the Competition Act, which talks to turnover, the other one with, which one? Yes, I mean, that's what we're doing. We're saying turnover, if you do not comply with the law, the first offense, 2%, second offense, 4%, 6, 8, 10. It's not 10% first offense, 2% first offense. Therefore, if employers are saying, well, it's too much, we say, well, it means you're saying to us you're not going to comply with the law. It's saying to us that, we say, if you comply with the law, you've got nothing to fear about this. And if you are a perpetual non-compliance, then it will go to 10%. And that's the other proposal. Now, we're also proposing that this will also, if you do not supply us with information around income differentials, because the law asks you to give us your income differential, so that we can check whether you pay your workers correctly. You give us income differential in terms of the levels. You say, senior management, I've got so many people, they are this level, this is what I'm paying them, so that we can compare whether a white man is getting more or are African males, females at the bottom of the ladder, although they are senior management, where do they feature? And if you don't give us that information, it should be also a contravention of the Act. And then that's what you're saying. Those are the, in the nutshell, honorable members, those are the crux of the proposal that we're putting on the table. There's nothing that causes unemployment here. There's nothing unconstitutional about what we're proposing, and we can't really come and understand what is the hullabaloo about the proposal that we put on the table. We'll take questions.
Are there any questions, honorable members?
Honorable Sivandi.
Thank you, Chairperson.
In the slides, there are more information on the slides dealing with the annual report of last year, trying to that gives the statistics of wage employment equity. If the committee wants us to go through that, we can go through that. But we just concentrated now on the amendment.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, Chairperson, I won't ask, but I think it is very necessary for us to maybe to comment. And first of all, I'd like to maybe appreciate from maybe to thank them from the department maybe to give us this explanation on what is happening. And then also because this thing of which you're explaining about this thing of the difference of regional and provincial, I think it's very much important. And what I will echo also is that, please, good people, there's nothing wrong with the paper, but the thing with the problem where it is about the people who are writing. The people who are writing, because people must be sensitive about our country. Our country comes first for any nation, for any party, were from the different parties, but I think with us, we work as a team. Although we are from the different parties, but we work as a team because our priorities, our country, the image of the country. So also I'd like to appeal to some people who are writing that they must write positive when it's necessary, negative when it's necessary, but not always negative even when it's not negative. And the reason why I said I wanted to comment, Chairperson, is that I think you gave us a directive, in fact, to assist us to guide, not a directive, but to guide us how to deal about this matter, because I think this is not yet final. And the thing is still embargoed. It's still going to go some processes like NEDLAC and that alike. So that was my submission. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mleza.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me also join in echoing appreciation. I raised that comment before deliberately because I had said, fortunately, I had that the privilege. You know, this question of staying alone here, it gives you a chance to go through this document. So I had fine time, and let me make it official. I think we have to, Honorable Chairman. What you will remember, Dr. Mkalipi, that last year, what we have been hammering in the department was that the act per se is correct and is taking care of our particularly the lowly paid employees. But we had a problem with enforcement. But now when you look at the enforcement part, it is now catered for. And I'm also happy with this explanation around the categorization, and also your explanation on the demographic profile. We have to welcome it, Chairperson, and it is self-explanatory, because what it means then is that it depends on the area of jurisdiction of that particular company. If it is regional-based, it will then focus on the regional area of jurisdiction, and then the demographic profile would be informed as such. If it's national, it will not pretend to be regional when we know that, in actual fact, it is national. I'm sure those who fear this amendment would be running away from being assessed accordingly. Otherwise, for now, let's allow the process to go. You will come back and give us a feedback after all the processes have gone, as the Chairperson has indicated, after which then we will then take a formal decision on the act. Otherwise, for now, let's also think that you thought that let's see the documentation even before it goes all these stages. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lenz and Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. From my side, I also want to thank the department to look into this matter again. I think if you're looking into Section 42, it is very fair now for all the people in South Africa. And that explanation we have from your side, and also the proposed changes, I can live with it and I can go with it. And thank you very much. But I think what we must do in the future is, maybe you've done it, is to have an interview with the media and inform him exactly what is going on and how the law is working in this regard. But they always know they are looking for something to use the whip. And but I would suggest maybe in the future talk to the people again and explain it again to them, and maybe they will know discussions in, at the end of the day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khunabad. Wizard.
Now, Chatterson is also to join our colleagues there to thank the department to make that law to easy for our people. The only thing that supported that presentation.
No, thank you very much, honorable members, for your comments. I think maybe, you know, we need to make the point as the select committee of the NCOP as a house of parliament that as public representatives, it is quite disturbing sometimes to hear matters being put across to the public in the manner in which they are being put through. And as a select committee, we must be unequivocal in saying that it is irresponsible for the media to have handled the matter in the manner in which they have handled this particular issue. Over and above that, we also need to say it is irresponsible also. It was highly irresponsible for the Federation, Solidarity, to have handled this particular matter in the manner in which they have handled it. When in actual fact, Solidarity forms part of the constituency of labor in NetLab, where they had the platform to really now raise their issues or reservations that they had with a piece of legislation. And I'm raising this precisely because of the way Honorable Sibande is raising it, that some of the level of irresponsibility that leadership at times present itself, you don't know whether if they are playing to the public gallery or are they trying to be smarter than any other person, only to appear to be the most stupid, because of it clearly shows that they did not even read the act. Their own interpretation of the act is not consistent with what the act wants to achieve or what wants to do. And it puts us now in a very difficult situation, because it is easy for them just to issue a statement in the press, but who are the ordinary people on the ground asking? They are not going to ask Solidarity. In my constituency, there's no Solidarity there. They're going to ask me questions. In the Northern Cape, we are also faced with the very same problem that the Western Cape is faced with. And my constituency in the Northern Cape would want to know, but you, Parliament, why are you passing legislation that seeks to alienate us as a colored population? Are we not South Africans? Are we not South African citizens? What is it that you are doing? Where am I in KwaZulu-Natal? You'll be faced with the same question. And without this kind of a briefing and understanding, now you'll be able to respond to anybody in KZN who is of an Indian origin, who feels that he's been alienated now, he's not part of South Africa. We need just to make the point as a select committee that ours as a responsible parliament, we will ensure and work very hard to continue to build a South Africa that is non-racist, that is non-sexist, democratic and prosperous, wherein which each and every South African will feel part of being part of this particular wonderful country of ours. Anybody would want to make a contribution to the development of the country, whether it be economically and otherwise. But everybody, we want to send a message as a select committee that it is our responsibility as parliament, and we will do it
We'll make it our responsibility. As we go out into our constituencies, we will make it our responsibility to explain to our people and to tell them that you are part of South Africa. You are a citizen of South Africa. And therefore, also call upon. We know, I mean, it's about the, this is a capitalist state, the media. We know the media houses, who owns the media houses. It's about making money. It's about profiling yourself. It's about being the best out there and all those sorts of things. It's the nature of capitalism. It's nature. It's immoral at times, as a system. Because, you know, you're chasing numbers. You're not chasing facts at times. You just want the numbers in order to be the best. What am I lying about? Even if you're not sure of the story, you say, no, but there's an ombudsman who will always apologize later. So, so long as we've made the billions, we'll apologize later. Thank you very much to the department, and we will work with you. We will ensure, of course, by the time the bill has been processed, has gone through its the entire metamorphosis, by the time it reaches Parliament, we will engage now thoroughly and ensure that our views also find expression. Thank you very much for that presentation. There are a few things that we would want, of course, to quickly check with the department, which is outside the briefing. There's a very interesting issue that was raised this morning during a programming meeting, where it is quite clear that the Auditor General is consistently characterizing members of Parliament as employees, to a point where now even the Auditor General is charging members of Parliament for not paying unemployment insurance fund. When that matter is followed up, it is said, no, it's the Department of Labor. Because in terms of the law, we are characterized as employees. Therefore, we must pay the unemployment insurance fund. When in actual fact, the question is, who is our employer? Who is our employer? So we've been charged as members of parliament that if the department is unable to make some moves in amending that that piece of legislation, we would kickstart the process. In any case, it's our mandate. We are lawmakers. So we will have to look at that piece of legislation and amend it to take out that thing. Because as public representatives, once you are not returned to Parliament by the electorate, you can't go and claim unemployment insurance fund as if you... from the electorate, you know, that's why the question, who's my employer? You know, therefore you must pay me my unemployment insurance fund. So that's a matter that we think that the department must really look into. But nevertheless, thank you very much, and thank you very much to the members of the media, and hope that from now on we'll act very responsibly as we move forward in uniting South Africa and South Africans. Thank you very much. The meeting stands. No. For now, we'll deal with the in-house matters. So you are excused. Thanks a lot.
Cool.
Isn't it on the website?
No, on the website. Yes.
Is it? Only
Only
9 hours. Oh, how expensive.
I don't know about that.
Somebody
only. Yeah.
So they were saying he doesn't look like he has the material to be a presenter.
Well, I'm TV.
And coaching and stuff. Yeah, okay. So they said, no, it will take him like years because, you know, he doesn't fulfill that look. But then within a couple of months, he all did well for himself.
So you were at E also?
Who, me?
You?
No. Where did you work before?
No, I was working for UCT
as
a researcher. You see, I was, while I was doing my master's, I should do field work and research.
So you were in academic?
I was in academia, yeah. It's time to move out of it. I needed a change, man.
Yeah, sometimes the person can get caught up.
It's all the same shit, isn't it?
It's all the same, although I was happy with the explanation.
Now you understand. So you've got a national company, so you can still do it.
But I've got a problem with the way they put it now. It's a bit too general.
Yeah.
Too general.
They might say national,
but
they keep regional.
Yeah.
Now you can say I'm a
national
company,
Western
everybody gives
me support.
I understand.
I don't like this. Can you just give me the...
Economic active. Azebro. What is this now? Huh? Tim Bin Kosi.
Okay, T.
No.
T-H.
T-H,
nice. E-M,
E-M,
B-I-N,
B-I-N,
K-O-S-I,
K-O-S-I,
Mkalipi,
M,
M-K-A,
okay.
L-I-P-I,
L-I-P-I,
at labor,
L-A-B-O-U-R,
.gov.za.
Yeah, you thought it was a bit too general.
I felt from a legal perspective, too general.
My clients are going to love this. They're going to love this. No, actually, good point.